Well, hello, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know, the place to get empowered with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health, your hormones, and optimal well-being. So thank you so much for tuning in. This is another great opportunity to be having an in-depth conversation on subjects that women really must know. I want to let everyone know I am about to give birth to a brand new website, so stay tuned. It's going to be just fantastic, more information, more access to so many of my articles and video clips and interviews. So this is a place that really is a source of tremendous information. It's all there for free, and I hope you all take advantage of it. And the best thing to do is just opt in to whatwomenmustknow.com. Once you've opted in, you'll get my special reports, and of course, we'll get archives from all my radio shows and kept abreast of the various projects that I'm involved with. And also, if you go over to Facebook, you can find me there at What Women Must Know. And I suggest you befriend me, like me, whatever you need to do, because I am always posting really valuable tips and information and articles and just, again, more of the knowledge that really makes us allows us, as I like to say, stepping into the power that we need to have. So those are some great opportunities. I also want to announce, this is the first announcement of a brand new program that is starting on April 19th. It is a 4-week teleseminar program called Getting Your Hormones Back on Track. You know, I've really been thinking about how I can share with women the level and quality of information that I have access to. I see lots of women in my personal practice as a naturopathic doctor, either in person or mostly over phone or Skype consultations, but you can only get to so many people in a day on a one-on-one basis. So I have created this fantastic new program called Getting Your Hormones Back on Track. It's a really, really affordable program. It's going to be over 4 sessions, hour and a half each. It's strictly limited in numbers, so we're going to have a small group of women, because what I really want to be able to do is guide each woman with their own particular hormonal needs and challenges, as well as use the conference calls as an opportunity to further educate and provide the tips and knowledge to address whatever the issues are, everything from fibroids and endometriosis to hot flashes, night sweats, to osteoporosis, to low libido, to aging skin, how to build muscle mass, how to lose weight, how to protect your breast, what to do if you've had a hysterectomy or you want to prevent one. I mean, the list goes on, and that is the whole purpose, is to just provide a wealth of information. In addition, we'll be offering 3 whole food supplements, my 2 books. I mean, it's just an awesome, awesome program, so I'm really excited about it. If you want to get more information about this experience, then, again, just opt into What Women Must Know, because I am about to send out some new information all about the program. Because it's very limited in numbers, you really want to jump in quickly if you are interested in taking this opportunity to get empowered with truthful information so you know what's going on with your hormones and well-being. And there is so much we as women need to know. That's what my first lesson was when I was beginning this journey of trying to sort out my own hormonal havoc, as I like to call it. I had to wade through all the myths and misinformation. So that is all part of this experience to help you step into that level of greater health and greater wisdom and greater knowledge. So I'm excited and hope many of you will take advantage of this amazing 4-week sessions. Okay, so having said all that, in our quest for understanding the choices we need to make regarding our health and our hormones, one of the things I always ask women in my lectures and presentations, how do you know what's going on with your hormones? How do you get your hormones tested? How do you evaluate what your real issues are with your hormones? And inevitably, women will come back saying, well, I get my blood tested, or the decision of the doctor said I have this hormonal issue or low estrogens, whatever, because it was there in my blood test. So inevitably, that is the response from women when they go to their doctors. Well, here is the sad news. Blood tests are very, very ineffectual. They do not tell you the whole story. They can really miss the problem. And you do not want to make a decision on any sort of hormonal treatment based on blood tests. And why do I say that? Well, I'm going to leave that to my guest today because she is an expert in the field of diagnostic testing with saliva testing, and she's going to help reveal the whole story. And this is a really important show. I have to say, you cannot make a true diagnosis nor a proper plan of action if you don't have the whole story, and that story begins by what's going on with our hormones. So let me introduce my guest today. She is Dr. Rhonda Nelson, who has a passion for wellness, which was ignited way back in 1993 when her young daughter was diagnosed with a rare form of bone cancer. And as a result, she relentlessly has been searching for treatment options for her daughter, and it led Dr. Nelson to a simple truth that is the basis of her practice today. Dietary choices will affect the physiology of the body. Dr. Nelson is now an accomplished master herbalist, holds a PhD in holistic nutrition, and she is a longtime member of the American Association of Nutritional Consultants and also the National Speakers Association. Rhonda specializes in working with female hormone imbalances, children's issues, digestive disorders, fatigue, and repairing the negative effects of stress. Extremely active in her community, Dr. Nelson teaches nutrition to first graders at several elementary schools in the Redding, California area and holds local workshops on a variety of topics. She travels extensively teaching doctors and other health professionals about functional endocrinology and the use of saliva testing as an important evaluation tool. Rhonda is a recurring keynote speaker at multiple national events for alternative medicine and nutrition. Her practical, down-to-earth communication style and warm personality create an atmosphere of hope for those wanting to regain and maintain an outstanding level of health and wellness. So it's my great pleasure today to welcome Dr. Rhonda Nelson to the show. Hello, Rhonda.
Well, hello. That was a very nice introduction you gave me. Thank you very much.
Well, I have to say it was really impressive. You know, you have wonderful credentials, but what really impressed me most of all was the fact that you're teaching nutrition to first graders. I just think that is phenomenal.
It is one of the most exciting things that I do. I love teaching them. They're just so cute. And when I go, I spend about 45 minutes with them, and there's 80 of them. It's a, you know, we bring all the first grade classes together, and they just sit so quietly, and I do a lot of interactive stuff with them. But the greatest part of that is that when I'm done, they're so excited about the apple that they have in their lunch. And they're so excited, and they'll come back to me, up to me the next time I come, "Mrs. Nelson, guess what I ate for breakfast?" And they're just so proud of themselves. So I love it that you get to kind of put a little imprint on them when they're so young. I really do love doing it.
And that's where it begins, because we have a lot of work to do to counter all those ads they see on television.
Agreed.
So, I could ask you lots of questions about your first grade experience, but let's move on to the topic at hand, which is saliva testing. Now, you and I know that's the only way to go when it comes to really assessing hormones, but so many people know nothing about saliva testing. So let's start at the beginning, and let's talk about saliva testing. So what is saliva testing?
Well, it's a good, very good question, because there's, as you know, blood testing, or serum testing as it's known, is kind of the gold standard by which the medical community use to evaluate hormone status in the body. There's just a kind of a big problem with that, and the problem is this. So for your listeners who don't understand the difference, I'm going to talk real specifically about the difference between blood and the difference between saliva. What are they? How are they different? How are they the same? Blood tests measure the what's called the bound form of the hormone and the unbound form. So it's bound and free is the way that we would describe that. Now, a bound hormone, as you know, Cheryl, is kind of like, I say it's like a hormone on handcuffs. Okay, so it's just like it's handcuffed. The hormone is unable to really, it can't really do its job very well. The reason it can't do its job well is because in the tissue is because it's bound onto a protein. And the protein prevents it from getting to the exact area where we want it to be. For example, maybe we want to have adrenal hormones, or we want to work on the ovaries, the hormones that come out of the ovaries. If we don't have the right protein, the hormone that's able to get to those glands because it's bound up, it's handcuffed to another type of a binding protein, then we can't get the hormone into the tissue. Now, the free part of the hormones, those are the ones that actually can get out of the bloodstream and move into the tissue. So I explain it like this. It's like having your car on a freeway or a road in your city. You're bound to that road, but if you're a free hormone, you can leave the main road and you can get out into the neighborhood. And we want the hormones from the bloodstream to be able to get out into the neighborhood and do what they need to do. So that's what blood tests will give you. Is that kind of information. They'll give you bound and free. Now, the bad news is that the serum gives you 95% of what we see on a blood test is the bound form of the hormone. So we're only seeing the large bound portion of the hormone. We're not seeing what's actually in the tissue. And this is why hormone overdoses in women are not readily picked up on a blood test.
You know, that's such an important point, and I think it needs to be emphasized. So the problem with the blood test, we're looking at hormones, but we're not getting a really accurate picture of what we need to be looking at if we want to get a proper assessment. We get numbers, but they're not relevant to what's really going on the tissue level. And
that's exactly
right.
Yep, that's exactly right. And so what we find is then, the next question is, well, if the free hormones are what affect the tissue, so when we say tissue, we're talking about the actual gland itself, the thyroid, the adrenal gland, the ovaries, whatever the gland is that you're talking about. What we'd have to ask is, well, if we can't use blood to find out how much hormone is getting into the tissue, then what other medium can we use? And that's where saliva comes in. The way that saliva is collected in the mouth, the way that the cells of the mouth work is pretty amazing because these cells are almost like a filter and they don't allow the protein-bound hormone to come into the saliva.
Yeah,
so the saliva, it's amazing.
Yeah.
So the saliva only carries the free part of the hormone. In other words, it's all the cars that are not hooked to a protein that can go into the neighborhood. And they can go to their houses and they can shop and they can buy groceries. They don't stay on the interstate or they don't stay on the freeways. They're free. They can go out and do what they need to do in the body. And saliva has only free hormones. So when we collect saliva, we can now see, do we have too many or not enough of a particular hormone, such as estrogen in women or cortisol for the adrenal glands? And those are so very closely related, as you know. So there's the difference between serum testing and saliva testing. Serum testing gives you primarily the bound form of the hormone. In other words, it's not able to affect the tissue. So the imbalances are going to be undetected in a blood test, undetectable. The saliva test, however, is going to tell you exactly what's going on in the tissue. So you can see whether you're being overdosed or you have an insufficient amount of hormones, whatever hormone it is you're looking at.
And, you know, the saliva test is so important because you're getting a true picture, and you have probably seen it in your practice, and I see this in my practice all the time. Women come in, and they've gotten their blood tests from their doctors, and based on the blood tests, the doctors have made recommendations, and generally it goes like this. my blood test said I'm really low in estrogen. And therefore, they put me on, you know, what used to be HRT, now it's bioidentical hormones, including bioidentical estrogen, which is the same estrogen that is found in HRT these days. So estrogen is estrogen is estrogen. And so they're put on this combination of hormones based on their blood tests that said, oops, low estrogen, maybe a little low progesterone, maybe even low testosterone, and they're sent on their way. But if I were to assess these patients, and of course I do, when they come in and I look at their symptoms, I look at their body types, and I look at all these things, it's, you know, really difficult for me to believe they are really low in estrogen, especially if you're carrying extra weight, right? Because our fat cells make estrogen. So
that's
now
right.
I see these women put on bioidentical hormones. These are perimenopausal, menopausal women, and they're put on, by the way, rather high doses of estrogen because their blood tests show that they're really low. And now they're walking time bombs because they are feeling terrible. They are taking high doses of estrogen. And if they were to have gotten the correct test, they would most likely have shown that they were very either normal in range or maybe a little higher in estrogen, which is a critical hormone to properly assess, and be put on the right protocol. So it can lead women down a very dangerous path.
It does. And one of the things that you hit the nail on the head, Cheryl, because when the tissue estrogen is high and yet a blood test shows low, it doesn't take a lot of thought to figure out that giving a woman, whether it's a bioidentical estrogen, which we would hope, at least if we have to do some kind of estrogen, that it's a bioidentical estrogen, it doesn't take a lot to be able to figure out that maybe that's not best treatment. Maybe what we need to do is find out why that estrogen level in the tissue is elevated. Where is it coming? What's the source? Is it coming from it? Is it made inside the body? Is it coming outside the body? But instead, because we've got a blood test, so 5% or less of what shows up on that in the blood, the actual number that shows up on a blood test from your doctor is going to be the free hormone, less than 5%. So we don't know. And so it's only, you know, intuitive for the doctor to say, well, let's just give them some estrogen because their estrogen is very low, when in essence, you're exactly right. And I see this all the time where women will come in and they're actually severely estrogen dominant, yet their blood test shows that it's low. And the funny thing to me is that I say, you know, you've got symptoms that are showing me you're estrogen dominant, and if we have time to talk about this, which I think is an important point, how a woman can actually be estrogen dominant but have symptoms of estrogen deficiency. And that's a whole, that's a conversation that I think is important. If we have time, maybe we can touch on that. But they'll come in with obvious hormone symptoms, yet the blood tests show that they're low. And the patient will say to me, well, how do I know, why would I believe you? My doctor says. And I say, well, there's always different ways to look into a house. If your body is a house, there's windows in the front of the house and on the sides of the house and the back of the house. And from some windows, you're going to get one viewpoint. And from another window, you're going to get another viewpoint. This is just another window. It's just another way to look in the body, but it's a very specific window. We're looking at the free hormones. We're looking at the hormones that are in the tissue, not the ones that are circulating in the bloodstream. Because our bodies don't run by what's in the bloodstream. The blood is the blood. The freeway is the freeway, and the neighborhood is the neighborhood. They're not the same thing. So to assess what's on the freeway doesn't tell me anything about the traffic jam that's happening over in the neighborhood. They're two completely different perspectives, and we have to look at serum or blood tests and saliva tests from that same perspective.
I once took both tests at the same time. I did a saliva test because I wanted to see what would happen. I took a saliva test and I did the serum testing. And it was so interesting because I got two totally different readouts, as is expected. So, if I were to make a decision based on the blood serum testing, which showed that I was low, I would have been treated accordingly. And based on the saliva testing, which showed that I actually did not have low estrogen, which is, you know, not as it's really not common to see women with low estrogens. Generally, we are normal or high, and we can talk a little bit more about that because that's part of the myth that unfortunately kind of permeates our society and our thinking. But it was quite a revelation to see I had two totally different pictures based on these two different tests. So it's really important because I see these patients that have been diagnosed and treated based on a blood serum testing are being prescribed very high doses of estrogen. And we're talking sometimes, you know, milligram or higher. I mean, they're very high doses. They're the doses that we would see in the 80s when they were on HRT. And that alarms me because not only is it an inappropriate treatment, it's a very high dose, which can have some serious consequences.
Well, and if you think, Cheryl, of the consequences that happen, especially for a woman who already has high levels of estrogen in the tissue, in the local tissue, then to put her on even more estrogen, she may initially feel better because the estrogen delivery route is a little different. So the cells are going to look at it differently. They're going to take it differently. They're going to respond differently. There's an initially, they may feel a little bit better, but it's within a fairly short period of time. Better for a little while, but I don't feel good again, and these are my symptoms. They're the same as they were before or possibly even worse. And now I know I'm making a very broad generalization in referring to the medical, your doctor, and not all medical doctors are like this, but just in general, this is the general response is, well, if you're feeling bad, if it worked, and now it worked for a little while, now you're not feeling good, let's just give you a little more.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how these dosages continue to increase and increase and increase, primarily in the group of women that are postmenopausal, because that's where we see most of the hormone effects. We don't usually see, once in a while, I'll have a cycling woman that'll come in, and she'll be on, you know, progesterone or something days, you know, 16 through 28 or something. But not very often. Most of the time, these dosages, these hormones are given to menopausal women who are basically having permanent PMS. Whatever their PMS symptoms were while they were cycling, once you stop having that monthly cycle, that hormone imbalance that caused the PMS in the first place is really just sort of your permanent state of postmenopausal, you know, dysregulation or discomfort. Because it didn't get resolved while you were cycling, and it's still not resolved. And so they're symptomatic, so then they are given bioidentical hormones to, quote, manage the symptoms, but we never fix the underlying problem.
And that's a really big problem. You know, one of the things that I have written about in my book, Hormone Heresy, was this myth about perimenopausal time, which is roughly 5 to 10 years before we have complete cessation of our menstrual cycles. And it's a time of lots of fluctuations. But it was believed, and probably still is believed, because it has to still be the prevailing thought to put women on HRT or bioidentical hormones while they're perimenopausal, is that at the perimenopausal time, it's the beginning of the failing of the ovaries, which is part of such a myth that's existing, that the ovaries fail at menopause. So it's this prevailing belief that the ovaries start to give up the ghost, and we've got to kind of prop them up. But what I discovered that totally blew me away was that the perimenopausal time is when the ovaries, because communication gets a little faulty, not as clear in our perimenopausal years, the brain, the pituitary, is really trying to encourage the ovaries and send messages to kind of give it, you know, the last hurrah. So, and you can mention if you see this in your saliva testing, because I see it with my patients, perimenopausal time is often a time when women have some of the highest levels of estrogen in their entire life. And fascinating.
It is fascinating because the ovaries, there's this confusion between the pituitary gland and the ovaries. Now, just as a review, the pituitary gland receives information because the hypothalamus collects information from the body, from all over the body, the nervous system, what you see, what you think, you feel, your interpretation of sight, sound, smell, color, relationship, stress. And it takes all of that and it filters it like a funnel down into the pituitary gland. And the hypothalamus says to the pituitary, hey, listen, she still needs to ovulate. So why don't you go ahead and send that message downstream to those ovaries? And the pituitary says, yes, sir. The pituitary sends out the signal. The signal goes to the ovaries. And the ovaries look back up at the pituitary gland and say, you know, yeah, I don't think so. I'm done. I have, you know, given you plenty of eggs over these years, and I'm done. I don't have so many to choose from. They're not looking very viable, and really wouldn't be good for this woman to get pregnant right now, so I don't think so. And the pituitary is still getting messages from upstream, from the hypothalamus, and is still saying, no, 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 I need you to ovulate, I need you to ovulate, and there's this confusion. Then the pituitary will stop signaling, tells the hypothalamus, listen, I'm not getting any response. Like, I'm ringing them, I'm calling them on the phone, but the answering machine's not even coming on. Like, I'm not getting any feedback at all. And then one day, the ovary will wake up and go, you know, I think we're just going to have a little, I think I found a good egg. We're just going to go ahead and donate this one out into the body, see if we can, you know, do something with it. And then estrogen levels will get high again. And this back and forth starts to happen, which is what we find in perimenopause, where you kind of have a cycle, then you kind of don't. Or the cycle length becomes shorter or it becomes longer. Or you go a few months and then you have a few cycles. And it's this dance between the pituitary and the ovary that is on again, off again. It's like a bad relationship. On again, off again, on again, off again. And you're right. Those estrogen levels will they'll be high and then they'll drop. And then they'll go way back up and then they'll drop. Well, our bodies are meant to handle fluctuating hormones. Men's physiology can't handle that, but we are designed that way, to have a high surge of estrogen and then it drops, and a high surge of progesterone and then it drops. But in this type of cyclical response between the pituitary and the ovary is confusing, and it creates even more symptoms. Then the woman, we just get cranky. We don't know what to do with ourselves, and one day we're happy and the next day we're not happy.
Rhonda, we'll just hold it right there. We have so much more to share. We have to take a break, and we'll be right back. This is Dr. Cheryl Sellman. You are listening to What Women Must Know, and we're talking about why saliva testing is a way to test hormones. So don't go away. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. This is Dr. Cheryl Sellman. You are listening to What Women Must Know. And today we're talking to Dr. Rhonda Nelson, who is a master herbalist. She's a PhD in holistic nutrition, and she has a lot to say about how we get our hormones tested, particularly explaining why saliva testing is a much more accurate way to assess hormones. And we do need an accurate way to assess our hormones so we know what kinds of protocols and action we need to be taking to restore our hormonal balance and well-being. So, Rhonda, we're talking about some great information about the difference between serum testing, blood serum testing, and saliva testing, and what really goes on in perimenopause. So how do you recommend women use a saliva test to evaluate their hormones? Can you do that at any stage of your life? Let's talk a bit more about the appropriateness of getting saliva testing for what kinds of conditions women may be experiencing and what ages would be appropriate.
Well, that's a great point to make, because it's, as you know, when women move from, you know, adolescent girls move into puberty, their hormones are the little ovary is just kind of exercising its muscles. It's not quite, it takes a year or two or 3 years for that cycle to kind of normalize and regulate. Once the cycles are fairly regular, we would hope a normal length of cycle is about 28 days, sometimes 27, 29, 30, but it's going to be right in at that four-week mark. And that's just a normal length of the cycle. When we use saliva testing, the best parts about saliva testing that I love is being able to evaluate the entire cycle of a woman who's having a monthly period, because those hormones move. They are up and they're down. And the two primary hormones we look at during a female cycle is the specific estrogen that's called estradiol, but we will refer to it just as an estrogen in general. But we look at estrogen, estradiol, and we look at progesterone. Now, conventionally, serum testing or blood testing will look at those two hormones anywhere between days 19 to 21, right in there in the cycle. And without explaining the whole physiology of how these hormones move along in the cycle, in theory, that's kind of that's a pretty okay time to test. But the problem is, as you know, Cheryl, that most women that come to you or I don't have normal cycles. That's why they come, because they have a problem. And so when you do a blood test during days 19 to 21, remember we're only getting the bound, primarily the bound hormones, very little of the active tissue hormone, and we're only looking at a snapshot. So it would be like watching a movie, a two-hour movie, and taking 1 minute of the movie and being able to say we know everything about the whole movie from that 1 minute. That's craziness. So what we do with saliva testing is we actually are able to take 1 minute snippets, so to speak, of the entire cycle. So we look at the saliva, we collect the saliva on day one of the cycle, which is the first day of bleeding, heavy bleeding, not spotting. And then a few days later, we have the patient collect another saliva sample, put it in the freezer. Then a few days later, another one. And we collect 11 samples over the course of the full 4 weeks of her cycle. The last sample is collected on day one of her following period. This then allows us to be able to see exactly what those that estrogen and progesterone are doing throughout the course of the 4 weeks. And it's very easy to pinpoint exactly what the problem is with her cycle, if there's any kind of dysregulation, and we're able to see what those tissue hormone levels are. Is she indeed estrogen dominant? And as you know, Cheryl, most of the women that come in are not necessarily estrogen dominant, but what's the problem that we see with them?
Oh, they're progesterone deficient.
Exactly. They're insufficient progesterone during the second half of the cycle, and that's what makes women nutty. Crazy, cranky, mean, snappy, emotional, all of the PMS-type symptoms that we have, that's what makes them crazy, is because they can't manage their, they don't get enough progesterone during the latter half of the cycle to offset the teeth of the estrogen. And so without that ample amount of progesterone, they really can get kind of cranky. So that's how we measure a cycling woman, a woman who's having a regular period. We measure her 11 samples throughout the whole, her whole cycle. And then for a menopausal woman, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, and you said it earlier, but that is never done with a blood test. You go in, get your blood drawn, and you go home. So
correct.
You're not catching a picture throughout the month.
What if the progesterone levels were insufficient, let's say, days 20 through 28, or 24, 22, 26 through 28? That's when she really doesn't have enough progesterone. We would never catch that with a blood test.
Right.
And the doctor would say, oh, looks like you're fine. And the patient's like, I am so not fine. I am far from fine. This is really not working out for me. What do you mean I'm fine? So there's just not, the evaluation is just not thorough enough for a woman who's cycling. Now, for menopausal women, those hormones have really, when they're, if a woman is finally into menopause, the constant back and forth communication between the pituitary and the ovary has really kind of toned down, and those two glands have kind of come to a workable agreement with one another. Okay, you're not going to give me any more eggs. Okay, you're not going to talk to me anymore. Great. It's good. So the hormones just kind of stay steady. They never move and fluctuate. So a menopausal woman, all we have to do is we can collect one sample on one day, any day we want to collect it. It doesn't matter because the hormones, for the most part, they don't fluctuate anymore. That's menopause. We don't have those moving hormones because we're not having a cycle. Menopausal women are very, very easy in application to test because it's just a single test. A cycling woman, you have to be a little bit more diligent and map out that whole cycle in order to find out what the problem is.
Now let's talk about another feature that is available through saliva testing, which is not available through blood serum testing and is rarely used by doctors anyway. And that is the role of testing for your cortisol levels, your key stress hormone made by the adrenals.
The cortisol is very important, and if you understand how these hormones work, if you evaluate a female hormone problem, you have to evaluate the adrenals. They're kind of like I use this freeway analogy because it works. You know, on a maybe not a freeway, but like a business loop or something, how you'll have a frontage road right next to the freeway. And the frontage road, you can go almost as fast as you can on the freeway, but it has a little bit better access to the neighborhoods and the businesses that might be on that frontage road. But if there's a problem, if the freeway is like the female hormones, the sex hormones, estrogen, progesterone, and the frontage road are like the adrenal hormones, if there's a blockage or a problem on either one of them, we're going to have a big traffic jam. If there's an accident on the freeway, then everybody's going to route over to the frontage road and vice versa. The adrenals and the female hormones, specifically the ovaries, they are so connected. They're really, really very relationally connected in the way that the hormones interact with one another. So when you have a woman that comes in and she is really complaining of, you know, insomnia, fatigue, other adrenal-related problems that you might suspect where there's a cortisol problem, and cortisol being the hormone that's secreted by the adrenal glands, and it keeps you awake and alert, and it's what wakes you up in the morning. Low levels of it at night are what allow you to fall asleep and then sleep through the rest of the night. When those cortisol levels start either going excessively high or bottoming out because of chronic fatigue, chronic adrenal stress resulting in a lot of fatigue, you can bet, Cheryl, that there's going to be a female hormone problem because I have just caused an obstruction in the frontage road. Now all that traffic has to go over, and it's going to mess up the freeway. So if one is dysregulated, the other one's going to be dysregulated. So I, in my opinion, clinically, if you're going to really evaluate a woman, you are not doing a good job if you're not evaluating her adrenal hormones and her female sex hormones at the same time, because they're both so interconnected. If you fix one and you don't fix the other one, then you're only getting half of the problem solved. You have to look at both.
And this turns out to be a real problem when a woman goes to a traditional medical doctor, because the adrenals are not evaluated at all. I mean, it's a standard part of the saliva testing that I do, and it's so fundamental to know what those adrenals are. They're so primary to what's happening with all the other symptoms, hormonal imbalances, and yet it's something that is never really looked at all, or unless someone goes in with obvious symptoms of really extreme fatigue and adrenal exhaustion. And I have to say this, you know, even if that's the case, a doctor will often put a patient with very exhausted adrenals on some sort of cortisone. And I actually had a friend who was put on hydrocortisone for exhausted adrenals for 2 years. And then she was diagnosed little ways down the track with cataracts, which is one of the consequences of using the steroid, which is so potent. So it's like, you know, it just was so frustrating to see what I believe is an inappropriate diagnosis, but it was certainly an inappropriate treatment, and the consequences as a result of a very toxic drug.
Yeah, when you look at adrenal function, the adrenal glands become weak and fatigued. And I don't know very many women that have a lifestyle that is kind of kicked back and laid back and, you know, no stress to speak of. You kind of get up, do your thing, go to work, come home. We all have stress. Everybody does. Whether you're in your childbearing years or you're raising a family, or you've finished raising your family and you're pursuing a career, you have stress all the way throughout, even in childhood. Children that are raised in an alcoholic home or an abusive home or a military home where they're moving all the time and they don't have that stability, stressors can come in many different forms and varieties. But that prolonged exposure to stress year after year after year, those adrenal glands begin to cease their ability to produce cortisol. The gland just gets weak. It atrophies. It slows down. It just doesn't have the juice to be able to produce the hormone. And the only way that I know to really adequately test that is by using what we call a four-sample saliva test. Cortisol has a very natural rhythm during the day. It's highest in the morning, and it drops down a little bit at noon, and then it kind of tapers off, and then by the evening is the lowest point of cortisol production, and that's so that you can go to sleep. It peaks again at 5 or 6 a.m., and the cortisol comes right back up, and you wake up, and you do it all over again. But most people can't wake up without an alarm clock because they're tired, because the cortisol is insufficient. Rarely, at maybe 1 out of 100 tests that I'll run in my office will come back with normal adrenals. Now, granted, the people that are coming to me are already not doing well, so that I have to factor that in, but I rarely see them normal. Most of the time, when we measure those four cortisols, one first thing in the morning, one saliva collection at noon, one at between 4 and 5, and then the last one just before bed, when you look at those and you look at the pattern, there's something messy going on in there. Blood sugar will mess it up, stress, or you can see just the effects of the long-term chronic exhaustion as a result of excessive stress over a prolonged period of time.
Well, I have to say, I have yet to encounter a woman who has a normal adrenal gland. So, you know, it's a really serious problem. And, of course, not only will it affect the hormonal balance, but it accelerates our aging process. So we don't want to allow adrenal exhaustion to continue in our life. We do need to address it.
It's just so, it's such an important part of assessing the entire hormonal picture for a woman. And it's equally important in men. We want to assess their adrenal function as well as we look at their male sex hormones, which are going to primarily be, you know, testosterone and androstenedione and DHT. Those are the male hormones. But with women, we're going to be looking basically at the same things, the female sex hormones and the adrenal hormones, but you just really have to look at them together in order to get a good picture. Then you can work with, you know, yourself, Cheryl, or and me at my clinic, or whatever person that you're working with, but you can find then the specific things that are going to feed those adrenal glands and bring them back to normal. If the woman that you were referring to earlier that had been given the hydrocortisone, that was not really needed because the adrenal glands can heal and repair naturally through herbs and other nutrients, vitamin C, vitamin B, zinc. There's a lot of nutrients that those adrenal glands need in order to repair. Same kind of thing with the female hormone dysregulation. What we want to do is feed the ovaries. We want to feed the pituitary. We want to feed the cycle. We want to keep the stress handling side in balance, so we keep the frontage road clear, and we want to keep the freeway clear so that everybody starts, the traffic starts moving the way that it's supposed to. We don't get any kind of congestion going on. But you have to evaluate them both and then treat them accordingly. Always my deference is going to be to try and find the alternative way to treat it. And if we have to, then we can use something medical, but let's at least try it in a way that's a little bit more life-supporting, health-supporting, that's going to really feed and rebuild them to optimal function rather than just remediating the symptoms.
And I think that's the difference between a more integrative or holistic approach. It's the focus is really on how do you restore function, not just provide a drug to try to address a presenting symptom. How do you restore function? How do you get those little adrenal glands, you know, buffed up again? How do you get them to come alive and be strong and healthy, which we can. We can regenerate those adrenals, but they are just so fundamental to so many things. And it kind of leads us into the next issue that can be looked at through saliva testing, and that has to do with blood sugar regulation.
Yeah, blood sugar is kind of a big deal because we've been so conditioned to eat this diet that's really, it's readily available and it's almost to some degree forced upon us about, you know, eating a diet that's high in grains and high in whole grains and fruits and veggies and not so much on the meat department and watch your fat intake. And what happens is we end up being carb heavy, protein and fat light, and our blood sugars start to spike all over the place. And, you know, interestingly, the adrenal glands are largely responsible for blood sugar management and regulation, as you know. So when you stabilize blood sugar in women, I often tell them 50% of your fatigue issues are going to go away just by keeping your blood sugar stable, by changing a few little things in your diet. 50% of the fatigue will go away. The afternoon fatigue almost always completely disappears in 2 to 3 days once that blood sugar is very stable. But if it's allowed by your dietary choices to be up and down and glucose goes up insulin comes in, relieves the glucose burden in the bloodstream glucose drops down, you get a craving, you eat something else, up it goes, the insulin from the pancreas comes in, it brings it down, it's this yo-yo, and it just, it's really tough on those adrenal glands. They're just working all the time. So not only do we have stress that's stressing them, but we have blood sugar dysregulation, which is stressing them. And so we're kind of in big trouble unless we fix the blood sugar. That at least takes that pressure off of the adrenal glands to try and help, to try and manage or regulate or stabilize our blood sugar.
So some of the saliva panels actually can look at the blood sugar issues, correct?
They will look at insulin. The blood panel, the saliva panel that I use measures two insulin samples. We measure one that's a fasting insulin, which is taken out of the first saliva collection in the morning when you're evaluating adrenals. Remember I said that first one is when you first wake up in the morning between 6 and 8 a.m. That morning collection, we're going to collect what we call a fasting insulin sample. So you're going to collect that saliva before you've eaten anything, done anything. That's going to tell us how well is that blood sugar or in your insulin responding to blood sugar first thing in the morning. I just had a lady come back this week, and her fasting insulin on the saliva test on that particular day was through the roof. So I knew that she was having difficulty regulating her blood sugar, that it was high, had been high all night long, and she was still had high levels of saliva insulin when she woke up in the morning. And then the second one that we measure is right after the noon, right in the noon sample collection, the collection of saliva, but it measures the insulin after you've eaten your lunch because you want to eat, and then about an hour later you want to, you know, collect the saliva again. So we can measure both fasting and non-fasting, but it measures insulin, not glucose. Blood testing is the best way to measure glucose.
Right. So, you know, through the use of getting the saliva testing done, you really get such a great picture of what's going on with the hormones, the steroid hormones, the estrogens and progestins. You have a look at the adrenal hormones, you can look at blood sugar levels, you get picture. And from that picture, based on the patient's presenting symptoms and history and in conversation, you have so much more information to put together a very effective program for that patient, don't you think?
Yeah, I agree. And on the adrenal test, and I will say that the lab that I use, and Cheryl, I believe you use the same lab, it's called Diagnostics. And the lab actually has put together a panel, an adrenal assessment panel. It's called the Adrenal Stress Index. And on that adrenal panel, not only, as you mentioned, do you get those four cortisols, we measure insulin, but also of really importance is there's a sensitivity marker that will tell you if the patient has any kind of a sensitivity towards gluten. And, you know, now we see patients more and more and more that have this inability to break those proteins down and use them in the digestive system. And if you can't, if they're sensitive to it and their body doesn't do well with it, it's going to just cause inflammation in there, and we don't want that. So this test also tells you it's not a celiac test. It's not meant to be that. It's a screening tool, but it gives you a good indication of whether the patient is able to tolerate gluten or not. And the other thing it will give you is an indication of how healthy or strong the immune system is inside the digestive tract itself. 80% of our immune function is initiated and comes from the small intestinal lining. So it's very important to look at what that immune function is and how well that intestinal lining is functioning.
Now,
so it's a great test.
And it's really important to state here that these tests really need to be ordered through a practitioner. You just can't go to the lab and order these tests. It has to be done through a practitioner. And even if there are other labs out there that are offering saliva testing, I don't recommend that women just go and do the test and get the results and then what? Because you really need the guidance to evaluate these results in light of the bigger picture and how to put you know, yourself or get a proper protocol designed for you. And, I mean, that's where the help of a practitioner comes in. And I have to say, asking your medical doctor to go and get a saliva test probably isn't going to be the best thing either. Of course, they're probably not interested, but also they don't have that knowledge to do that, as opposed to practitioners like myself as a naturopath and you as a nutritionist. And we've been trained in this. And so that's just the caveat I want to share with all my listeners. You know, if you're interested in doing a saliva test, find a good practitioner who has the knowledge, who can guide you. It's well worth the investment, because you'll put together a really effective protocol that will address the problem, will really hit the bullseye, which is what you want.
There's so many options out there, especially if you have a patient who is internet savvy. And I will tell patients when they come into my office, so help me, if you get on the internet, I'm going to chase you down. Because the internet can be the worst thing for them to do. Because they'll go on and find 15 things that say they're going to fix your adrenal glands, and they take them and nothing happens. Because it's just like you said, it's not taking the entire test, all of the findings into context, and then creating a plan and a protocol that's specific for the person, for the individual, that's addressing their adrenal function as well as any female sex hormone imbalances that they may have. And you can oftentimes kind of kill all those birds with one stone. You can do a few things and get a big, broad swipe of the brush in treating some of the dysregulation and dysfunction that happens, but it has to be with someone who, A, knows how to read and understand the test, and that's a provider, a practitioner, and then someone who knows what each of the glands, the tissue, how to clear excess hormones out of the tissue if there are any, how to repair and support the adrenal glands naturally. You have to work with someone who knows how to do that. If you don't, then you're just going to end up a year later with the same problem or worse, and you have a test that you looked at and it looked messed up and you thought you knew how to fix it, but you don't. And you can go online and order saliva testing, but there's nobody to give you the appropriate protocols, and I can tell you for a fact that those tests are not, they're not as thorough, and they're not as accurate. We don't recommend doing the online saliva testing. It's best to go through a provider, a practitioner. I agree.
And one last thing, because we're just coming to the end of the show. It's gone really fast, Rhonda. Such great information. These tests are also valuable for men. We've been talking about women. The show really is focused on women. But we must also mention that men can use saliva testing to assess their hormones, particularly their, well, men have estrogen, they have progesterone, but really the testosterone is one of those key hormones, the insulin, the looking at what's happening with their blood sugar is another thing, and they definitely need to get their adrenals addressed as well. So I just want to mention that, because I've occasionally worked with men using saliva testing, but I know that's a really powerful tool for them as well.
And one other thing, you also can't ignore the children, the population of children. You can, if they have saliva, you can test them. And the cortisol output in a child is the same as it is for a 3-year-old as it is should be for an 80-year-old. There's no difference.
Yeah, that's great information, because I just was presented with a 12-year-old who has a lot of anxiety attacks and has had for most of their childhood. So that's really great information. Thanks for that.
You just collect the exact same way for a child, and you'd be surprised how many times they'll come back in severe fatigue. I had a couple of 8-year-old boys. They were twins, and they came back, and their adrenals were not producing cortisol. It was just surprisingly low at 8 years old, and they were already in adrenal fatigue. That has got to get corrected, or they're going to have problems later in life. So very important screening tool for these kids that come in with fatigue or learning problems, or even the ADD, ADHD kids, really important to check adrenal hormones.
Rhonda, before we have to wrap things up, do you have a website? Do you have an email address? How can people contact you?
If you want to contact me, the best way to get me is through my website is www.restorationhealth.net, and it's R-E-S. TORATIONHEALTH.net, restorationhealth.net. And it's up but undergoing some construction. We're rewriting the website, so there's nothing on there at the moment, but at least you'll have the website. My email address is Rhonda, R-O-N-D-A, at restorationhealth.net. you're welcome to contact me, ask questions. So I will. The website will be up and completed within 6 weeks. So it's slated in about mid to late May to be up and ready to go. So I'm so glad to have been on the show. I've loved being with you. I've enjoyed talking with you. And I'm happy to help you with anything that you need assistance with, but love talking about saliva testing because it's such a great tool for evaluating the piece that the medical model misses. And we just slip saliva in there, and it makes such a great, perfect picture of the patient's overall health and well-being.
Well, this has been a fantastic conversation. Thank you so much, Rhonda. It was wonderful.
You're welcome. Thanks, Cheryl.
Okay, bye now.
Bye-bye.
And we've come to the end of another fantastic show. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You're listening to What Women Must Know. And remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.